This is Seth from Medicon Bikes, and you're listening to the Sprocket Podcast.
And hello, everyone, and welcome to the Sprocket Podcast. This is where we are simplifying the good life. My name is Brock Dittus.
And I'm Brandon Rhodes. We are broadcasting from the People's Republic of Portland, nestled in the heart of Cascadia.
We are the show that brings you somewhat irreverent conversations about the intricacies of thinking locally, with a global perspective, and enjoying the best that life has to offer along the way.
We're covering day-to-day life, food, alcohol, bicycles, alternative transportation, arts, culture, communication, the internet, a variegated paracritic Saturnalia. I don't know.
I think we've used all those big words before.
I'm running out of my big board bin.
That's okay. I actually listen every day to the Merriam-Webster podcast word of the day, which is great. They tell you exactly, none of the words are useful. They're like all really old ones. So what can you do? But we'll slip those in someday. But that is neither here nor there. We are here tonight on the Sprocket with Mr. Seth Richardson of Medicon Bikes here in Portland, Oregon. Hello, Seth.
Hey, thanks to be here.
Thanks for joining us.
My pleasure.
We're going to be talking a little bit about your shop, about your experience with bicycles, about being on the scene here and a mover and a shaker in Portland. And before we get to that, though, we've got some contact information, which I set on the table.
Damn you.
Our email address, should you feel the inclination to write to us, is thesprocketpodcast@gmail.com. Our phone number to leave us a voicemail is 503-847-9774. And actually, we had a fellow from Fort Collins who went to the Handmade Bike Show down in Austin, and he gave us just a little bit of feedback, so we'll roll that in a minute. We've got a website. It's thesprocket.potbean.com. We've got a listing on iTunes. You can find us there. And if you like what you're hearing, we've got a donate button, and you can buy our beer for us. So we had a couple of people do that. We appreciate that. You people are wonderful people.
Thank you for keeping us sober.
That's right. And the rest of you are wonderful people too, but you haven't bought us beer yet. So what can you do? We've got some upcoming shows. There's our friend David Hetty. He's going to come in and talk next week. He loves bikes, and David actually did some work on my bike just this past week. I think he put a new rear cassette on it, and so it's like it's as smooth as butter now. It used to be. I broke the rear. It's not a chain ring, but like one of the cogs on the cassette. I was standing over it with just a little bit too much force, and probably for one time too many, and the whole thing just snapped off. So in the place of where I had, what was that?
That's unusual.
Is it?
Yeah.
Oh, that's well. I guess it's good to know. It's an accomplishment. But so it's nice to have a bike that runs again. So he'll be here on March 20th. Josh, the bike plumber of St. Francis Plumbing, he's going to come in to tell us how plumbing by bike works. 327. Have you met him?
Yeah, he's come into the shop several times.
Oh, nice, yeah. Nice. Yeah, he seems like a cool guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, and his email address, I won't say where it's, well, I won't say what it is. He's got a cool email address. I don't want to get a bunch of spam. Not, of course, that you loyal listener would do such a thing. The grease bus company, Michael Parzale, March 27th is going to come and talk to us about running a bus to Mount Hood and other places throughout the Northwest on grease. And April 3rd, Joe Kermaski, the Metal Cowboy, tale and regaler of lore of bicycles and things. He's going to come in and talk to us a little bit as well. Mm-hmm. So those are the upcoming shows. A couple things we found on the internet. There's Street Films, which I believe is associated with Street's blog. They've got this video series called Moving Beyond the Automobile, and they had an installation about bicycling, which was pretty good.
They've got a series of videos up there, a lot of them yet to be released. There's really good media up there.
Yeah, have you seen some of those?
Yeah, they're doing really great work.
Yeah,
I enjoy their style.
Impressed. I saw them just, I watched the bicycling video just the other night. It featured many, many prominent Portlanders, so good for Portland and good for Street's blog. Traveling Too is a website. There's some folks, I believe they live in Holland now. They've got their own podcast, which I am a listener of, and they had an interesting article about a guy they bumped into who, his bike was relatively unpacked. He was touring, and I believe he came from China, but he didn't have a whole lot on his bike. He didn't have like the tools, and the stuff that he was carrying wasn't like your typical bike tour stuff. So that was pretty cool. Yeah, and then Bike Portland had the video, which we were just talking about before we rolled the tape, about bike lights. The last one said, you know, not wearing bike lights is like not wearing pants. You should wear them. the newest one has, I believe the guy's name is Mark Allen. He's got an impressive array of lights on his bicycle and on his person when he rides. And there's a dude dressed like a Klingon, so... That's worth seeing all in for itself.
Yeah,
so,
good call.
Yeah. So that's stuff from the internet. We should roll the before we roll the voicemail.
This is from, my one duty on this show.
That really is. Brandon, the reason you are here is to
this
remind us.
This is the
us
latest
to,
it's been.
Not only to remind us to drink stuff, but to remind us what we're drinking.
Yeah.
Wow. So lead us in. Tell us what you got.
All right. Let's see. Well, I bought this for last week's episode, but we just kept drinking Old Crow, so it didn't get open. So I saved $5 this week. I purchased from Central Point, Oregon, near where I was born, Walkabout Brewing Company's Workers Pale Ale. It's, 5.5% alcohol by volume and has remarkably little to say about itself. Brewed in 7-barrel batches.
7 barrels.
So,
is that a small batch?
I feel like that's pretty small.
It's a small number.
Honestly, anybody in Central Point is going to be a small.
Digit.
Yeah, so they're probably doing this on the side of their house, which does happen. It's really exciting.
There you go.
So good right on these guys barrel. For making the jump from hobby to hopefully part-time profitable business.
Yeah,
so,
yeah, good for them.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, you sir, pop that open. And
I shall.
We'll get this. And my wife found something from Kona Brewing, and I believe, let's see here, it's the Fire Rock Pale Ale. I had Kona's, I believe it was a coffee infused stout. This one here is, it's got a beautiful label. I was really kind of suckered in. I like the color yellow. So
I think
regardless of whether or not the beer is any good, which I assume it will be, it's got a wonderful presentation. So Seth, help yourself. Enjoy. Seth, you told me that you, I believe as we were emailing back and forth, you said you're a fan of the lighter beers. So
yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, that's good.
Oops.
There you go. Y'all in Central Point just made a good beer. This is proper. It does what I want beer to.
That's impressive.
And goes beyond that, too. What I want beer to do is not taste horrible and give me a fun time, but this is going beyond that and giving me some good flavors as well. So
Nice. Yeah, getting intoxicated is one thing, but getting intoxicated and enjoying it...
With class.
That is
That's actually the entire goal of this whole damn city.
Yeah, that's right.
Can we at least feign classiness as
that's
we
right.
get drunk?
Yeah. What's your favorite, Seth? What's your favorite cheap beer?
Favorite cheap beer? Not too picky. I'll Hams, Pabst, whatever.
Hams. Mm-hmm. Have you heard of Riley's? There's a little tavern down on like 92nd and Foster.
Yeah, not familiar.
They have the original Hams bear in a 3-dimensional little statue, kind of hidden behind the bar somewhere. I think he used to. The Hams bear was like one of those cartoon characters that kind of like Joe Camel. They can't use him anymore, but he's in the memories of millions. So. Yeah.
And the livers.
And the livers. Quite so. let me roll this little voicemail here. We can listen to what the dude said.
Hey, Sprocket Broadcast. This is Zach from Fort Collins, Colorado. Calling to give you a little recap of last weekend's show, the Handbill Show in Austin, Texas. It was NAB, North Bering Handbill Bicycle Show. It was great. It's awesome to see all the small builders there that aren't in it for the money. They're in it because of their love for bicycles. Their love of hand fabricating sweet stuff for people to use to get around with to make their life the bicycle friendly life they're looking for. It's cool. It's where all the new trends come from. The big manufacturers go there to pick up on, whether it be the real classic looks, I saw a lot of the cream swampy tires there. Of course, bamboo bikes. It's really interesting to see where these trends are going to head with the big manufacturers next year. Yeah, I also wanted to touch on, I heard you guys talking about food a lot. We were at a store today and see some extremely overweight moms buying buying their kids tons of junk food with food stamps, welfare checks. That'd be an interesting topic for a show, buying unhealthy food for little fat kids. But hey, hope you, and our tax money's paying for these kids to eat really unhealthy junk. So, hey, guys, have a good show today, and hold it down up in Portland. Have a good one. Bye.
I could sympathize with that, working in food service.
Yeah.
And seeing dudes that have, like, really great clothes and great phones and a cigarette behind their ear, and they're like, can I buy this with food stamps?
Yeah. I like the fact that all the innovative bikes do seem to run Schwalbe tires. I mean, not all of them, but I'm a big fan. Do you guys have a tire provider that you use at Medicon?
A lot of tires I get are actually from the local warehouse. They carry all sorts of stuff.
Okay, so you guys don't stick to one brand or anything? You're not a...
We're not big enough to have, like, a relationship with the manufacturer.
Sure.
So we go through warehouses, distributors.
Yeah.
But I carry a lot of Schwalbe tires.
Okay,
I've always had good results with them.
Yeah. I've actually... Let's see. I've been trying to find some. I should talk to you, actually, because...
Sure.
Yeah. I've been trying to find the Marathon Plus, I think, is the one that has the... Not only the flat protection, like the Kevlar belting, but also the, like, what, it's like half an inch of padding or something like that.
Yeah, it's a real thick belt.
Yeah. The one I have now has a bunch of little blue triangles on the back, and so that means it's probably about time to start start looking into something new. So,
yeah.
Anyway, Schwalbe tires, I'm a big fan of those.
Well, but, I'll probably be ordering from that warehouse this week.
There we go. But we will talk, sir, after the show wraps.
Sure.
The bamboo bikes, that's something that's fascinating to me. Just the idea that it's not traditionally, bicycles are generally made of metal. Mm-hmm. I think I saw a wooden bike somewhere one time, but making it out of anything but metal is kind of,
right.
It seems dicey almost. Like it seems like it wouldn't work, but.
Yeah, from what I've read, it does well, actually. Yeah. Bamboo is just a pretty amazing material, easy to grow. I've looked into it a little bit. I was almost like thinking, like, maybe I could put a little patch in my backyard.
Seriously.
Certain types of bamboo will grow like 20 feet in a season.
I was going to say, yeah, bamboo just like sprouts up like crazy.
It grows up and out really easily. Like it'll keep going and going. The cool thing is it breaks down cement and asphalt really quick. It just like the roots push up and crack it apart. So if you're into that sort of poetic vision of like the earth tearing apart our witty shit.
Right.
That's kind of cool.
Yeah.
So good job, bamboo.
If you're an urban anarchist and you want to just take it out from the inside.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, don't bamboo, not bombs.
Give a job security to our street maintaining county and municipality employees.
Indeed.
Keep fixing the shit you break.
Yeah. Well, anyways, thanks, Zach, for letting us know what happened. I remember Zach sending me an email and saying, hey, I'm heading down in my Winnebago and going to spend some time down there and see some stuff. So. I believe we might have mentioned last week, Bike Portland, Jonathan Moss was there, and the Path Less Pedaled, Russ and Laura actually also.
They both were there?
Yeah, everybody's there, man. It's like the great confluence of all great bike minds. So, yeah. But thank you, Zach, for sending us your feedback and your report, and we will be we'll look forward to hearing from you again. So, yeah. That's pretty much all we've got in the way of business and small things. So we will turn our full and undivided attention to Seth. And Seth, do you want to start just by telling us how you got to Portland in the first place?
Oh, I was living in Memphis, Tennessee, playing in a band with a couple friends, and they wanted to come up here to the Northwest. It's the one corner of the U.S. I hadn't lived in.
Ah.
So yeah, I figured, what the hell?
Yeah.
And so here I am, and I'm really glad I did it.
Very good. Yeah, what kind of a band were you in?
Oh, yeah. I made the trip in my old Volkswagen van, a 1959 old thing with the trailer on the back, all sorts of stuff strapped to it, stuff on the roof.
Nice.
Going over the mountains with the little bitty engine in there, weighed down like that. That was in the middle of November, too. It was very cold and challenging.
So you really wanted to make sure that the engine kept running and that you made it all the way across the pass. And
yeah.
You didn't want to spend any nights there.
Yeah. No, I almost got stuck in the Siskiyou Mountains.
Really?
Coming over.
Wow.
Almost didn't have any chains with me, and they were just about to require chains.
Oh, okay. So it wasn't
kind of should have.
It wasn't like you didn't have traction. It was just that they were afraid you wouldn't have traction. So it was more a matter of legality than.
No. And after a certain amount of snow or whatever, they just put up the signs.
Right.
Chains required. They hadn't put the signs up yet, but they were about to.
There we go.
So it was about second gear going down the mountain, just about 20 miles an hour in the middle of the night, the snowstorm, one windshield wiper. It's an adventure.
That must have been, yeah. So anyways, you made it to Portland, and how long did it take before you opened Metacon?
Let's see, I've been here about 6 years, and Metacon is about 4 years old now.
Okay, yeah.
So, I'd been into bicycles in Memphis, and which there's not a whole lot of a bicycle community there.
Yeah, I was going to ask, what's the bicycling scene like in Memphis?
Supposedly it's much improved now.
Okay.
But at the time they had put the first signs ever that designated a road as a bikeway.
Okay.
So
bicycles, this is a good place for you to be?
Yeah, or more just to let the cars know they're actually allowed on the street.
Right, right.
Because there was a lot of shouting and honking and confusion by people when you were on the road.
Oh, I can imagine.
Stop riding your novelty toy on my roadway.
Get on the sidewalk. Sidewalk.
Yes. I was just thinking, even in the suburbs here, it seems like, especially if it's not a road with a bike lane or something, or there's not a lot of bicycles being announced, you kind of get the feeling that you're not only in the minority, but not necessarily wanted. So I can only imagine in a place that's even farther from a bike-centric metropolis, it's probably not necessarily the easiest place to make your way.
No, it was kind of challenging at times, but there was, it was still fun though.
yeah, for sure. I know, was it Bike Portland maybe that had, I think, a story about some way, maybe it was Memphis that they were working on debating about whether or not to install a bike lane or a turn lane, but I can't remember one where the story came from and two, if that's right. So that's neither here nor there. We'll move on. But yeah. Thank you, Brandon.
Yeah.
Thank you.
As far as, so you opened the shop about 4 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Did you have any sort of focus or vision as far as what kind of a shop it was going to be?
Well, I don't know. I'd for more than a decade, really wanted to have a mechanic shop. As a teenager, I wanted to do motorcycles, and then it was easier to get a job as an auto mechanic. And so I did that for a while and then bounced around with some stuff and then got into bicycles. And then it was like, oh, now I could actually afford to do this.
Right.
You know, like this is, you don't need big lifts or any of that. And it's just overall, I just liked it so much better.
Right. No one ever gets their ribs cracked from being underneath a bicycle when it falls on them.
Exactly. The automotive industry in general is just highly competitive and not much fun. And you kind of, if you're honest, sort of starve sort of thing.
Yeah.
While I enjoy working on any machines, really.
Sure.
That whole aspect of it, I very much didn't like.
Yeah. And speaking of working on machines, I hear that the Volkswagen requires a certain amount of specialized knowledge and constant attention. Is that necessarily true, or is that just if you don't take care of it in the first place?
Well, yeah, they do have certain weaknesses. Being air-cooled and everything, they're not as reliable as water-cooled cars. But the thing is, when something does go wrong, it's much easier to work on.
Okay, yeah.
So it's
sort of like the founding
out.
Principle of those things, right?
Yeah, no, it was simplicity, very much so. You can pull the engine out of it in about half an hour with just a car jack.
Right.
So,
jeez.
Yeah, so, I don't know. It's fun.
That's great. Yeah. Yeah, I think, I'm trying to remember the... the first time I went into your shop, I think it was when I had first moved to Portland. I've lived around the Portland area for a long time, but largely in the suburbs and largely in a suburban culture that didn't embrace the bicycle, that sort of thing. But I moved down here about 3 years ago, and I think it was not too long after that we went into your shop just kind of looking around, and me and some friends were trying to find some bikes. And you do a little bit of revitalizing and refurbishing of bicycles, don't you?
Yeah. Well, normally. At the moment, not.
Okay.
We did one of those Groupon coupons.
Oh, yeah. You were telling me about this. Oh. And didn't you just get swamped?
Oh, yeah. We sold 850 tune-up coupons.
My goodness.
Oh, so,
how many of you have been cashed in so far?
Let's see. Probably, I forget, about 550, 600.
Oh, for God's sake.
And we've got, with any coupon, some people never redeem it, but we've still got almost 200 people on the waiting list to get through before we're finally done. So Yeah, it's been it's a good thing though. I mean, those are all brand new customers.
Seriously,
great, great advertising. Blah blah blah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've heard the Groupon is you and your lady Brennan are kind of infatuated with the Groupon principle.
Occasionally, I think for the past 6 months they've been just selling like the daily deal is like a spa, and I didn't know there were so many fucking spas in the city.
Oh, right. And you're not much for the fingernails and that sort of thing.
No. No, not particularly. The cucumber slices on the eyes and such are not really my je ne sais quoi.
So you've been pretty busy with just maintenance work.
Yeah. So we sold out of the bikes we had like 4 or 5 months ago and haven't had time to build a single one. Nothing for sale.
So your inventory is pretty much zero.
At the moment. Okay. But yes, normally that's a big part of it.
Okay, yeah. What I was going to ask you about horror stories as far as what you've seen and maybe some of the bikes in the worst shape that you've been around. I would imagine if you're buying old bikes and kind of making them new bikes, you're bound to see a bunch of those. But even if you're bringing people in, if people are using the Groupon to get the tune up, I suppose you've probably seen people with a little bit of neglect or worse.
Oh yeah, I mean a lot of people look on their bikes as just kind of leisure items, toys.
Yeah,
so they don't get much attention. And the people that use them very seriously put a lot of wear on them. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, you kind of see a lot of that on both sides.
It's kind of damned if you do, damned if you don't. It's just like either way, if it's neglect or if it's overuse, you're just I shouldn't say that because overuse is that's the wrong term. You can never ride your bike too much.
No.
Heavy
use, indeed. Yeah, well used, well loved. what are some things you've seen that have been particularly egregious?
Let's see. Not too long ago, this one guy, very frequent rider, the down tube actually snapped.
Oh.
And he didn't notice it. Wow. He was just pedaling along still until his pedals were actually scraping the ground and he couldn't turn the cranks.
And the down tube, that's the one that goes diagonally from the headset down to the crank.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, because I had the seat tube crack on mine twice, I think, actually. I mean, I used to ride the old Schwinn bikes.
Mm-hmm.
And I think maybe that only happened on one frame. I destroyed two Schwinn frames, but they're not really built for touring. So, yeah, but the down tube, if you lose that, you've pretty much lost the integrity of your entire machine, right?
Like, No, the upper tube just kept bending until it was literally scraping the ground.
It went from a men's frame to a women's frame?
kind of in reverse.
Oh, yeah, that's right, yeah.
Anyway, yeah, so that was fun. I swapped as many of his parts over to another frame, basically.
Right.
Got
the frame
back on the road.
Couldn't be salvaged, I assume.
No. Yeah. It wasn't special enough to have it re-welded or anything.
The walk of horrors around Halloween time, maybe.
Seriously, yeah.
No, it's in one of my friend's gardens
now. Not happen to you,
Yeah, for sure. that just sounds, wow. And I guess, I mean, at one point, especially if you're into bikes, and as you are, you would notice the small things going wrong and probably be able to fix them. But I guess it's surprising to me how many things there are, even on a bicycle, that can go wrong. Just the idea that without regular maintenance, you know, if you don't lube your chain will eventually freeze up. So,
Well, the way I kind of explain it to people when they're like, oh, I should know how to work on my own bike, it's a simple machine, is that, it was only 100 years ago out of all of human history that we were advanced enough to even build a bicycle.
Right.
So while it is very simple compared to a car or something like that, it's actually a very complex machine, very specialized. Decades and decades of technological improvements, one on top of the other. So,
yeah.
So when anyone is embarrassed that they don't know something about their bike, I'm like, don't worry about it.
right. It is actually a quite complex.
It's not that hard to learn, but it's also understandably layered.
Yeah. No, it's a lot easier than most vehicles to learn how to work on.
Yeah.
But it takes time and effort.
So you said you started out working on automobiles and engines and that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Was making the shift to bicycles, since they're similarly complex, was there anything that you had to learn that you didn't already get from being an engine mechanic?
Oh, yeah. I mean, because bicycles, everything has to be light and compact. There's a lot of special tools and special little techniques. Nothing like, not rocket science.
Sure.
But being a mechanic gave me a huge head start compared to the average person, I suppose. But I'm... But yeah, no, there was a lot to learn.
Nice. Well, it's good to have people around that know stuff. That's something that I think all of us probably have appreciated at one point or another. Just it's kind of like having a car. Like, you don't need to know how to work on a car in order to drive the car. Similarly, you don't need to know how to work on your bike to drive a bike. And when you do have the problems, it's good to have someone you can turn to. So,
yeah. So when you switched industries, I mean, you talked about how, like, well, look, I can't be honest and remain a car. stay in that field. Were there also other ideological or sort of personal convictions that were like, okay, man, I really want to make the jump?
Well, I mean, the main thing that got me kind of started was I was working a job in downtown Memphis, and like any downtown area, the parking's terrible. It's a pain in the butt. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And so every day you're going down there and it's like, this is just ridiculous. Like, I spend more time parking and then walking to my right. place of business than driving here. So I was like, I bet what would be simpler? Oh, bicycle.
Yeah.
Bought a bicycle at a yard sale and started doing that. And it was, I could get to work faster. It was a 3 or 4 mile trip by bicycle. Then driving down, parking, walking, blah blah blah,
and saving tons of money.
Yeah. So eventually just sold the truck that I had at the time and started volunteering at a nonprofit shop in Memphis called Revolutions. I believe it's still going. That kind of got the whole ball rolling.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then it was just one thing I kind of. Early on, interested in motorcycles as far as motorized transportation. They're simpler. They're more human-sized than cars. I liked the simplicity of that. And then a bicycle was like, oh, geez, this is so much more simpler.
Right.
So it was...
Well, even the way that all the engine components are arranged inside a motorcycle's engine are arranged around the shape of a human.
Yeah. I mean, you have to actually straddle the machine.
Yeah, yeah. Whereas in a car, it's like, well, we got to fit all this shit in a box... with this spindle essentially going through the middle of it. That's mm-hmm. about it. We can play around with it in a million different ways, but
yeah,
there's no elegance to that.
No, no. I mean, they're useful things when you have to haul large cargo.
No kidding.
Right.
I love my bus when I need that, but mm-hmm. other than that, I hardly ever ride it or drive it.
Hey, so. I would say, to your credit, actually, one of the things that I appreciated about your website at Medicon Bikes was the idea that you said, hey, I've got a bus, and you didn't make any bones about it. And I think it's nice to have a healthy, balanced perspective about vehicle usage, you know, because it's probably really, and it's easy for me, especially just because I feel so strongly about, you know, bikes are such a great way to go, that it's really easy to just be like a Nazi about it and be like, you know, you drove a car, you are a bad person. And have you found a way to come to peace with both of those things existing?
Oh, well, I mean, you know, there's a lot of people that handicapped people, elderly people that carry large amounts of tools to work. Mm-hmm. You know, they can't ride a bicycle as their primary mode. So it's like, yeah, it just. Large portion of my customers are dropping their bikes off in their cars.
Right, right.
You know, I just try and encourage people, you know, just try and reduce it a little bit. Just
right.
use the bike a little bit more, walk a little more, you know. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can't expect everybody to just drop the way they have been living immediately.
Yeah, for sure. You know?
Especially
yeah.
families. I mean, that's the biggest shift. It's like, it's easy to talk to single folks about this sort of stuff. But like, once you've got kids, man, that's getting really tough.
Oh, yeah, that's almost falls under the cargo heading.
Exactly. Yeah, having lots of tools to carry around.
Yeah. There was one thing I remember reading on your bike, on your website. I think you had just a couple of pages devoted to bike care and bike philosophy. Mm. I remember the writing was something to the effect of saying that you go with the simplest equipment you can find. As far as like, you don't need really expensive components or expensive tires. You don't need a lot of, flat protection is good. Yeah. It's helpful. It's useful. It's not the end of the world if you get a flat tire, that sort of thing.
Oh yeah. No, I mean, I run the cheapest tires on my bike because, yeah. well, I get lots of practice fixing flats.
Sure.
So it's not, I've gotten pretty fast at it at this point, so it's not a big deal to me. So I'd rather run the cheaper tires.
Yeah.
That are usually lighter too than the flat protection ones.
Sure.
So,
do you have a time, a record that you keep trying to beat for yourself?
No, I've never actually measured. I knew one guy who claimed he had done one in like 60 seconds, which I don't think I really believed, but
right. And I assume that's not patching. That's replacing the tube and.
Yeah, that's what I usually carry an extra tube because it's faster and just swap
right,
it in
right.
and then patch that tube later. When
you
I
can
home.
Always patch it later. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I remember reading that. I think when I was preparing for my first big like multi-state bike tour, just looking for the idea that, you know, it's good to have spares because you don't always have time. You're not always in the right place. Flats almost never happen in a convenient place. So.
No, almost so by definition.
Exactly. So it's nice to know that if you do have a flat, you can swap out with a spare, and then yeah, if you're comfortable around the campfire or something, not too close to the campfire, but you know, at the right time when you have more time, you can always do the patch job later.
Yeah. Exactly.
Are you a bike tourist? Have you done some long distance things?
You know, I never really have had the chance. I've pretty much just done utilitarian riding.
Sure.
The main sort of thing that I've done. I have, and now that I'm actually running a bike shop, actually, that's my busiest part of the season. It's
right.
the hardest, mm-hmm. The best time to do that sort of stuff is
when
the hardest
everybody's
time.
Riding their bikes, right?
Yeah, and where I'm very, very busy.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense, actually. Yeah, so.
But eventually, as hopefully the shop keeps growing, hire some people on.
Right.
Be able to take a little more time off now and then.
Definitely.
On the note of the shop growing, what's the cross street of your
right on the corner of 60th and Foster.
Great.
Yep.
Yeah. It's a good. Thank you, Brandon. That's a good thing to remember.
Yes. Thank you.
If you happen to live in the Portland area and you're listening to this, Metacon is there, and you can speak with them.
And it's within walking or stumbling distance of several great bars and burger joints.
That's true. Yeah.
So if you just need to drop it off for a couple hours, get tanked, and then loosely bike home.
Yeah.
There you have it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, let's throw a break into the program here. We've got some music for you. This is Josh Schicker from his 2005 album Moonlighting. The song is called Feels Like Rain.
Something I believe but can't seem to see clearly. It follows me around. I can feel its heat surrounding me. Like every little thing we do, it fails to put good credit where it's due. It may be to you. And time again, it comes to pass that someone's thinking you're not last in the race to set the pace. And can you help me? Victory when it feels like rain today. I never know what to do when good things come my way. Yes, it feels like rain today. Can you help? Inside my veins, infecting all I see. I can't see. It makes me feel like I should run to the rescue of someone afraid and lost their way. And grant them peace to fill their needs and give them reason to believe that we will all see.
Welcome back to the Sprocket Podcast. I'm Brock, that's Brandon, and that is Seth Richardson of Metacon Bikes over there in the corner. Weighing in at many pounds and a strong track record.
Stop.
I was trying to do a wrestling thing, but it didn't work out. Okay. Well,
close enough.
Anyhow, I was going to ask you, Seth, a little bit about the idea of bicycling in bad weather, mm-hmm. As we've been having quite a bit of these days. Do you have any strategies or favorite gear that you use when the rain starts to roll in?
Unless I'm going a really long distance, I've gotten fond of this thing called a bike cape, and it basically... it's basically like a poncho slightly modified for a bicycle.
Yeah.
Shorter in the back so it won't get in the wheel. Has a little clip to hold it over your handlebars.
So it's basically creating like a little cab for you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it protects your hands and gives a little bit of protection to the legs too.
Wow.
And so, of course, it's smaller and lighter than your average rain gear.
Yeah.
Easier to put on. So if you were going real far, then full rain suit maybe. But
sure.
Yeah. Now, of course, with the poncho, you've got to have fenders, because otherwise the wheels are just throwing water up in your poncho.
Right.
But yeah, so lots of layers. I like wool.
Wool is great. Are you wearing wool now? Is that a...
Yeah, he's my little pants are wool.
Oh, nice.
Wool socks.
Nice. Yeah.
My sweater was partly wool anyway.
I'm a big fan of wool myself. The smart wool socks, that was something that changed my life back when I discovered that.
Changed your
it
life.
It really did, man, because
I've
got rubber boots now too. I didn't ever used to use those. But that's something I've used quite a bit. But, just the idea that your feet don't have to be cold and they don't have to be soaked when you show up where you're going. That was revolutionary for me. So yeah.
Yeah.
Dumping water out of your shoe when you get to anywhere.
Yeah, yeah, seriously. And having to wring out the socks, you know, and having a substantial amount of water being held there. And
Wet feet are the worst.
They really are. And especially, I mean, that's the one thing you really can't bounce back from either. Like, you can dry your hands off, you can find a towel, that sort of thing. But if your shoes are wet, that's pretty much curtains.
You're just stuck with it for the day.
Yeah.
They're not drying.
Yeah. So the bike cape, you said it goes over the hands as well?
It usually hangs over the handlebars.
Okay. Does that obviate the need for at least waterproof gloves? I mean, you might still need gloves to keep your hands warm, but
to
keep the water off your hands as well.
Yeah.
That's amazing. So how did you hear about these?
It's that little store on Hawthorne, the Monkey King.
Okay. I've seen that.
Randomly sent me a sample at the shop.
Yeah.
It was like, buy some from us. And so I tried it out for a while, and it's like, oh, this actually looks kind of dorky, but it actually works really well.
Yeah. Well, I remember, and I don't remember where I read about this, somewhere on the internet, that's a big trend for, I believe, in China. There's a lot of people using bikes in China to get around from place to place in the cities, and I believe that's where the cape comes from, if I'm not mistaken, but do you know one way or the other?
I believe so. I think on the package it actually said when they were, because I guess they go over to China all the time to import this stuff.
Okay.
They saw people whipping out these capes every time it looked like rain.
Yeah.
They were like, oh, this would do great in Portland.
Seriously. So. And it's especially on the days, and I mean, weather is different in wherever you go, but it's not unusual to be caught in some sort of rain that you didn't expect. Like, you can leave the house with sun and birds singing and all that, and then when you're about halfway to where you go, you're a rainstorm in your mind.
That's right.
Folding over on itself. But yeah.
And then you can put your cape on.
That's right. Yep. Yeah. So
it's fast and easy. With regular rain gear, it's always like, oh, do I want to go through all the trouble?
Definitely.
Is it going to rain? Oh, I'll risk it. And then you get deluged.
And that's been my downfall, because I'll be riding to work and it'll kind of start to feel like rain, and I'll think, no, I can make it. I'll get there before it starts to get really wet. And invariably that is not the case, you know.
Yeah.
like whenever I'm wearing my rain gear, that's when it always clears up and it's not useful. And whenever I am not wearing the rain gear, that's when the deluge comes. So
yeah, I think they've got a law about that.
Some dude named Murphy.
Yeah. Sounds right.
So that the cape, does it take a long, it doesn't seem like it would take that long to hook up.
No, it just plops right over your head. You might have to take your helmet off. That's it.
Right.
And so it goes, it'll also cover your backpack.
That's nice too.
And it packs into about a couple of softball size or so.
Just kind of
even that smaller.
Like that. Yeah.
Wow.
The size of a Wii controller.
I love the poetry of American ingenuity. We can figure anything out. We got to go to fucking China to figure it out. So like all our companies are owned by China and all that, but
right.
They're actually having the better ideas, frankly. So, hey, good for them.
That's right.
They're biking everywhere. They're going to solve the problems.
Indeed, yeah.
We wish everybody were biking.
I know I've seen some incredible photographs of just impossibly loaded bikes in China.
Oh, yeah.
The idea
that is good for that.
You're carrying, that's what the internet is for, that and fuzzy cats.
Yeah, fetishizing people who can't afford cars.
That's right.
Look what they do.
Yeah. You said the poncho has, not a poncho, but a cape, the device cape, I guess is the word you used. It goes over your head as well?
Yeah, it's got a hood.
Okay, yeah. Yeah,
if you want to use it, half the time I don't because I'm wearing a helmet. But,
right, right.
And these are made in Portland, or they're
no, they're imported by that
by this company.
By Monkey King, that little boutique shop on Hawthorne.
Okay.
Sure.
So all their stuff comes from China. A lot of Chairman Mao posters, and fun stuff like that.
Can I have Chairman Mao on a cape?
With a bird on it.
With a bird on it?
There's tape.
Chairman Mao flipping us off.
That's right.
Giving us the bird.
Seth, do you want to talk a little bit about the 50s Bikeway project? You said you've been involved with that. So what kind of involvement are you currently experiencing?
Oh, I'm representing the Foster Area Business Association on the Citizens Advisory Committee. For the 50s Bikeway Project.
That's a great title. It carries a lot of weight.
It just means I'm volunteering some time, really.
Yeah.
But it's been, there's part of the plan to be able to put, the basic thing is they're trying to put more bikeways further out.
Right.
In Portland. So,
and for anybody who doesn't live in Portland and is listening, who is most of our audience, I think, I would say, the 50s Bikeway Project is basically, we are on the outskirts of what is considered the bikeable port of Portland. I mean, there are bike lanes and bike facilities that stretch farther out than that. But I would say most people that have bicycling as a lifestyle generally center themselves closer into town.
Within about 60 Portland blocks of downtown.
Right, right. And the East Side 50 block is right about, it's kind of the dividing line between cool and uncool. So
Yeah.
So anyways, that's where they're trying to put this in.
Right, right. So mostly on 52nd, although it cuts back and forth a little here and there. But in a large portion of it, you can't really put bike lanes in without removing some car parking.
Right.
Which has been a little contentious. So to put actual proper bike lanes in that are, I think it's supposed to be 6 feet on either side, they would actually have to pull parking from both sides on a long stretch.
Right. And that's the sort of thing that most people are probably not really excited about if they live there.
No, definitely. Like, you know, and as we were saying earlier, handicapped people, elderly people, like,
right.
What are they going to hobble 2 or 3 blocks to get to their car? You know, you can understand it could be a hardship for some folks.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so what it's kind of coming down to is probably removing parking on just one side and having technically substandard bike lanes on a few parts.
Technically, which are still, those are probably better than most bike lanes in a lot of places, I'm sure.
It every little bit helps.
That's right, yeah.
So, you know, you kind of almost, on a personal level, you almost want to be like, well, you guys just need to take one for the team and
right.
The parking goes away. But democracy, compromise, all that.
Yeah.
So
we do all live here together. So
mm-hmm.
It's nice if it can somehow respect everyone as much as possible, I guess.
Right.
Yeah. There was an open house down in the Woodstock neighborhood that I was a part of. And you said you were there answering mm-hmm. questions. You were one of the official representatives with a name tag.
Yeah.
And everything.
A little volunteer guys.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That was, I would imagine at that point, I remember just from walking around, there was literature and signboards and that sort of thing talking about the proposed improvements mm-hmm. and everything that was supposed to be there. And the only thing I remember hearing as I walked through that room and was looking at all the things was angry groups of old people shouting at the official representatives and trying to help everyone understand. So
there was definitely some of that. I mean, by the time everything was said and done and they counted up all the comments, there were many more positive comments than negative.
That's right.
But the people, as is often the case, the people that were negative were loud about it.
They were more vocal.
So,
yeah.
Yeah.
Did you have any cases where you kind of had to duck and cover?
Yeah. And there was this one couple very early on that was just starting to basically yell at me about, like, there's too much stuff on 52nd.
Like, it's your
bikes
fault.
Are too much, and it's you guys have already made your decision. It's like, no, it's already funded. There's going to be something done on 52nd.
Right.
But other than that, nothing's for sure.
We're trying to figure out how to make it be awesome for you, too.
Yeah, we're trying to help everybody out. That's why the open house is here. And the idea is, usually when you put bike infrastructure in, it slows down the traffic and makes the street safer for
actually
everybody.
Makes it quieter as well. So, like, you damn hippie bicyclists are actually, like, making things more cool and chill and quiet and kid-friendly. Right. So if you'd like it to be louder, less chill, and less kid friendly. Hey,
yeah.
Keep on doing what you're doing, old lady.
So that was the minority, but they are definitely the ones that kind of stick out in your head, and it always at that point when you talk to those sort of people, it just evolves into like, well, you don't pay registration fees, you don't pay license fees, and all
right.
that sort of stuff. That really,
why do you hate America?
Yeah, it's basically
and
just
freedom.
That. I just love my country so much.
Or they'll yeah. the one I really love, they'll start asking you about some cyclist that annoyed them.
Like,
and like,
you must
why
know this
did they
guy,
do
right?
that asshole with the dreadlocks, do you?
Yeah. No, it's totally, it feels like if you're like a minority in a small town where everybody else assumes you know all the other minority people.
Right.
You know? You know that black guy?
Yeah. He's your buddy, right?
Yeah. Oh, boy.
So.
Well, I appreciate
some of that, but most of it was positive, actually, people, good comments and everything,
yeah.
and suggestions.
Mm-hmm. I am impressed just by the way that the entire, it's a city project, right? The city of Portland is looking mm-hmm. into this whole thing.
It's pretty much federally funded through a bunch of, I believe, the Obama's transportation grants. They've been doing a lot of those.
Okay. I didn't realize that, I guess. That's nice. So it's kind
and
of
Sam
filtering.
Sam Adams siphons it out. Yeah.
Sam Adams. Yeah. What a guy. So that's the... I don't know what that meant. It's not. Let's move right on.
I like Sam.
Sam Adams is a great guy.
Oh, me too.
Yeah.
I haven't agreed with him on everything, but.
Of course.
You know, blah, blah, blah. That's with any politician.
Oh, of course. I was just going to say that the city of Portland has been incredibly open and really willing to work with residents, it seems, on kind of what the best option is for this neighborhood and for the series of neighborhoods that are connected by the proposed bikeway and the proposed changes. I feel like most other cities would probably just kind of go in with a steamroller, both metaphorically and literally, and just lay down, you know, whatever it is they felt like was a good idea. So the fact that they have people coming in and being able to offer their input and offer really specific input. I remember we were, they had like a stack of Post-it notes and a huge map of all the proposed changes, and people, were encouraged to just put a post-it note down wherever they saw a potential problem. Be like, well, this stop sign, you know, it seems like it would slow us down, or this, you know, there shouldn't be a traffic calming device here because it would get in our way. Or,
yeah.
It was amazing how much detailed input they were willing to receive. So
yeah,
it's no, pretty great.
They actually do a pretty good job of that. You know, there's, I don't know, there's a part of the whole thing with the, since we're not putting in full bike lanes, is that the people that aren't very confident riders, they're interested. They're often called, what is it? Interested but concerned.
Yes.
people who would really like to ride, but they're a little scared of traffic, and it can be pretty intimidating at first. So if we're going to have the substandard bike lanes, the idea is we should have an alternate B route that'll weave through the neighborhoods, not as direct, not as fast.
Right.
But for people, like if you're going with kids or whatever through the neighborhood, it's much more pleasant than 52nd.
Right. Someplace where you don't have to interact with delivery trucks and mm-hmm. UPS.
Or the old lady on the front porch.
Or the old lady. Yeah. Shotgun. Exactly.
He's mad about her parking gone.
yeah.
So, but the, now there's one slightly contentious issue is where it would cross Powell. Mm-hmm. The Oregon Department of Transportation doesn't want to put a push-button signal there for pedestrians.
Oh, right, right.
Because there's another traffic signal close by.
Yeah, and Powell is a state highway, right?
Yeah, so yeah. They're
it's
in control
US
of that.
26, actually.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
In the middle of our fair city.
That's right. Mm-hmm. And it's better than the freeway
for,
that was
for those
going
who are outside
there.
Of Portland.
Yeah. Yes, but all the same, it's high traffic.
Hmm. Yeah, no, it can be really daunting to get across that street.
So that's been a bit of an issue then?
Well, yeah, well, because ODOT says that they don't want to put another signal there because it'll slow down traffic too much.
Uh-huh.
But when someone's trying to use a crosswalk, you're already supposed to stop.
Right,
and
right.
The signal wouldn't be stopping the traffic any more than it is already legally required to.
You wouldn't think, yeah.
So it's odd that it's as if they don't want the traffic to stop for pedestrians and cyclists because it would slow down the traffic, even though it legally they have to.
Yeah, the Department of Traffic and Transportation, they're not really interested in safety so much, are they?
Well, you know, I my impression is they've basically got a rule book that states how all this stuff goes,
right.
And regardless sometimes whether it's actually logical or not,
yeah,
they're just like, no.
Yeah.
So that's been... a lot of the people on the committee are a little up in arms about that. So,
yeah.
A little local politics. Yeah.
It's always exciting, I'm sure. Well, thanks for stepping up and being a part of that. That's the sort of thing that probably not everyone has the time and or patience for. So we do appreciate people stepping up and thinking through all the issues and being willing to interact with the public and the government, both of which are tricky customers at times.
Yeah, well, yeah. Definitely.
Yeah. Did you want to talk any about the, you had mentioned being a part of the, Lentz Business Association,
I'm
sorry.
The Urban Renewal.
Urban Renewal. That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Lentz, for those outside of Portland, is, the, outlying neighborhood that used to be a, little farming town.
Yeah.
Sort of.
And a town center.
That's where Brock and I live. And that's, sort of where, a thoroughfare you're nearby, and it concludes more or less. So
yeah, well,
it's where the city wants to see good things happen.
Right. No, and Foster is added into the Lentz Urban Renewal Area because it's the gateway to Lentz, basically.
Right, the connecting road between
it's our gateway drug. It's our
so to speak. Yeah.
Yeah. So Foster is basically been kind of drug into this whole process, which is all this and all the little sub neighborhoods all kind of pushing and pulling for their piece of the pie, sort of deal. And so yeah, but that the end result of that is basically the way I understand it is they're leveraging property values. The idea is if you invest in a neighborhood, the property values will go up and you'll get more property taxes. So they're basically borrowing that money from the future to spend now.
That deserves an incentive.
Thank you tomorrow for today.
Yeah. But supposedly the calculation is really conservative, so it's unlikely to be a problem.
Okay.
So
if it's a raging success and the Slingshot Lounge becomes like the big megalopolis of outer southeast...
Yeah.
Then we're fucked a little, but
well, I'm
nothing too bad.
Yeah, I don't know how that would work.
With Slingshot.
But yeah, so anyway, so one of the things like there's been a plan for the Foster Road streetscape to improve the safety and look of it. There's, in theory, there's now some actual money put aside for that. That plan's like almost 10 years old now.
Okay, yeah.
And pretty much nothing has happened.
Really that old?
Yeah, it was maybe it's only eight, something like that.
Wow. Sure.
It's an older one.
It's different.
Early 2000s.
That's back when there were meth houses on that street.
Mm-hmm.
I remember, I think I was looking at, there was a book that was talking about urban planning in Portland and that sort of thing. Got it from the library. But they were outlining the possible improvements, I think, both to the interstate corridor, which goes up towards Washington along Interstate Avenue, and I believe the Foster Neighborhood Improvement Project. And the interstate program was implemented, and it's got light rail going down there now, and all sorts of new businesses and property values have gone way up. It's admittedly, I think more high class than it used to be. Whereas, like you say, the our side of town hasn't quite gotten all of its desserts yet, I guess. So
yeah, now they're spending a huge amount of money on the kind of Lentz Town Center where Lentz Commons was that you were talking about, trying to revitalize that because that used to be the heart of Lentz, basically.
Right. Before it got bisected by a freeway.
Yeah, that's the thing that really makes it difficult and a bit of a...
It's about a third of it downtown.
Yeah, and it's, I mean, it's just not very pleasant with the traffic situation down there. So it'll be interesting to see how they deal with all that
as definitely.
All these projects come to fruition.
Yeah. Do you have any projections for the future as far as what that might look like? Or is it hard to say? It's still so nebulous.
Like, name any businesses that they would love to see go away there? No.
Well, we won't mention them by name, but there is a large establishment that's been there for a long time that many people have said would be the perfect location for a grocery. But
or McMinniman's.
That's true, yeah. Well, it's a place to go and shake your ass on Saturday nights.
Yeah,
now,
exactly. You can donate your copper pennies there.
You might say that. So, yeah, anyways. But yeah, so you've gotten to see some of the planning processes, and you have an ear to the tracks, as it were.
To a certain extent, it's I haven't been involved with that for too long, and it's such a massive project that I'm really kind of still figuring everything out and how all those moving pieces fit together, so to speak. So, but it's things like there's going to be at least a study done about how and if they will put a streetcar down Foster that will go all through Lentz and various things like that.
I hear streetcars are coming back.
Yeah, I think that's kind of the plan. Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of interest in it at the very least. Mm-hmm. And so there's a bunch of these preliminary studies that cost money that they're doing all over the city, I believe.
It's something that was kind of old and is now new again. The streetcar... I'm trying to remember. I mean, there's been a lot. I've been reading, you know, blogs and things on the internet about what used to be and what might be again. Just the idea that something simple and something that the infrastructure was kind of designed around, the idea that you could go places by rail.
Foster was built around a streetcar line going from downtown to this little tiny Mayberry-esque downtown.
Right.
And the future already happened, I guess you might say.
That's right.
If this happens. So.
It's been a while since Mayberry, that's for sure.
That's right.
Well, we probably should get the show closed out, but before we go, what advice would you give to, say, a bicyclist who perhaps is just interested but concerned? what sort of encouragement would you give somebody who's just kind of starting to jump in, get their feet wet?
Oh, well, I mean, it's just not really as hard as people think it is.
Uh-huh.
Bicycles are so efficient machines that, like, it doesn't take that much energy to pedal them at a sedate speed. Like, you can push yourself if you want.
Right.
And that's good for your health, et cetera, et cetera. But they're actually really, really efficient. So, you just gotta get out there and do it. Like, you stick to the residential roads. Don't deal with the traffic, you know, just buy a cheap bike to start off with, figure out what you like about it, what you don't, before you really invest in something is what I usually tell people.
Yeah.
And, it's easier than you think.
That's good. Sums it up. Yeah, I remember I was talking to somebody recently, and I don't remember exactly where the conversation came from or where it was going eventually, but we kind of hit the idea that that you don't have to ride on four-lane streets with, 45-mile-an-hour traffic just because that's the way you think as a driver of an automobile.
Mm.
There are many other streets that connect and often are quieter and more scenic than the arterials.
Oh, and on a bicycle, it's not any slower.
That's the thing, yeah.
Yeah,
it makes it real easy to, even to explore if you don't necessarily know where you're going. a wrong turn is not necessarily, it's not going to cost you 15 minutes because, you know, the next exit is 8 miles away or something.
Yeah, or getting a ticket for pulling a UE.
Right, right.
You know, yeah. No, I almost always just navigate by just weaving in the general direction of where I'm going.
Right, north, south, east, west.
You get to see different neighborhoods. You get to see different people, so it's cool.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Definitely. Try it. You'll like it.
There we go. Well, Seth, thank you for coming in. Thanks for joining us. People want to find you and your shop on the internet. Is it Metacon Bikes?
Yeah, Metacon Bikes.com.
There we go. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, you have been listening to The Sprocket Podcast. You can find us on the internet at thesprocket.podbean.com. Send us your feedback. We'd love to hear it. Suggestions for topics, guests, or drinks, send us an email. The address is thesprocketpodcast@gmail.com. Leave us a voicemail message. Tell us your stories and give us your input. It's 503-847-9774, and we will play you to millions. Thanks to Ryan J. Lane for providing our theme music. You can find him on the internet at myspace.com/RyanJLane. This has been The Sprocket. We will talk to you soon. Take care.
Hasta luego.
Do that again.
There we go.
All I can
ask
think
away, Brady.
Seth, what is what's the story behind the story of your bike shop, Metacon Bikes? God damn it! Answer the question.
It's just the words metal and icon kind of squished together.
That's
and
pretty groovy.
Most importantly, when you type it into Google, nothing else shows up.
So you win.
That's the most important criteria.
That's right. The Google defines all things. Yeah.
Brand recognition.
You with the microphone. What's the deal with search engines? And airplane food sucks.
What's the deal with grape nuts? I open the box. No grapes. No nuts.